Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Just happy as a clam today because Joe Heschmeyer and Chris Check are here. And it's time for Flannel Panel, where we talk about the news of the world from a Catholic perspective. Chris Check, president of Catholic Answers, thank you for being here.
Cy, thank you for having me. You left out the part where we wear flannel shirts, or some of us do.
Yes, you're right. I did leave that. We wear flannel shirts and talk about the news of the world from a Catholic perspective. And it's a very fine, it looks like a new flannel shirt.
No, I feel like
you're showing
off.
It's
been in the inventory for a while.
Oh, has it really?
I do have a new one. Yeah, which I guess I'll break out next time.
Okay. All right. And Joe Heschmeyer, apologist here at Catholic Answers, and the proprietor of Shameless Popery, his fantastic podcast, not wearing a flannel today, but I personally am excusing him from that. Joe, welcome.
Thank you. It felt like extraneous circumstances since tomorrow is Halloween.
And yeah, and just for to
that's
Joe,
tomorrow.
Joe has
that's not tomorrow.
The day after.
Oh, sorry.
Halloween is Friday.
This is yeah. the last.
This is Joe. Don't worry.
I haven't carved my pumpkin yet.
Joe knows
mischief night. Mischief night.
Joe knows the names of all the cardinals at the Second Lateran Council, but he doesn't know what day Halloween is.
I so rarely know. Halloween seems like the one day I should know when it is because we go way too big for Halloween. My wife is always like, "Don't spend money we don't have for Halloween stuff." That and the kids are like, "Do it," and it's a democracy.
I feel like I've complained about this on the flannel panel before, but right. My neighborhood is one of those that is
overdone.
The inflatables, and they come up on October 1st.
Yeah,
it's as if Nathaniel and I were trying to sort this out in our imaginations. It's as if there's an advent for Halloween.
Yes,
yes,
it's
yes.
nuts.
Right, that's right.
Well, so every evening.
But why does this make you mad? You seem mad about it.
Well, because Halloween, okay. Halloween is one day.
Yes,
and it's a fun day where it's a little spooky and it's fun, and the veil's a little thinner. I'm all for that stuff. Yeah. But then the next day is All Saints Day, and it's over. But there's no period of preparation.
Oh, yes, there is. Sometimes, are you ever like, it's like, it feels like the 4th of July just happened, and then you wander into a store and you're like, Halloween? What are you talking about? Halloween? You got to be kidding. But Joe, you overdo it, huh?
Well, yes, I do, objectively, but also subjectively if you're married to me. My wife is always like, you don't need two costumes as an adult who's not going to dress up, you know, that sort of thing. Like, that's.
You have to have one responsible adult in a marriage. That's the rule.
It's true.
You got to have
true.
One
and unfortunately,
responsible adult.
She is that for everything. So,
you've abdicated, in other words.
Exactly, basically. Now, there's other things where I'm like, we don't need to spend money on, you know, clothes for the kids, right? Unless they're costumes. But apparently, that's also bad news. That's just what it is.
We have a neighbor that completely overdid Halloween. And my wife and I were like, let's get a piece of black crepe paper and just cut out a black cat, stick that on our front door, and be like, we decorated for Halloween. Because that's how the people used to do it when we were kids.
Well, like, I like carving.
You'd get
I like
paper and you'd cut out a pumpkin and you'd stick it on your door and you'd be like, Happy Halloween, everybody.
Yes. I like carving the pumpkins. I like to do that. Where you carve the scary face in the pumpkin.
Yeah, I'm so bad at it.
I'm great at it.
They always look like, what was that movie that Mel Gibson did? The guy.
Signs.
Never mind. I won't remember it, so forget it.
Road Warrior.
No, stop. Just stop. We're not going to.
What Women Want.
Can you play Mel Gibson Saying Hello to Me, please? Whenever they start
hello,
on the
Cy.
Mel Gibson
hello,
thing.
Hi, Cy.
There we go. There's Mel Gibson saying hi to me.
I do want to, maybe a silver lining to this. For people who don't know what to do with Halloween and you want to do something maybe more liturgically appropriate. Now, I think it's very clear. I'm very pro doing stuff for Halloween as long as it's not celebrating the demonic or something. But you can also do things like they just did at my kid's school today, which is you have a Saints Day parade and the kids dress up as saints. And, you know, because this year All Saints Day is on Saturday. So this is a fun way for them to get to dress up.
I think
and
that's
it still
very
is
nice.
In a way that honors the saints. And there's a lot of good deep cuts because it turns out a lot of people choose saints that look like easy to make or buy Halloween costumes.
Yes, right. Like it will also serve as a Halloween costume.
St. George gets a surprising amount of love.
Yeah. Right. All right, I want to start with a new segment. We're going to flannel panel will from henceforth have a new segment if this goes well. We'll see. And it's called Two Unrelated Facts. I have two unrelated facts. I'm going to say one of them. You respond to it however you want. And then I'll read the second fact, and we'll see if it in any way influences what you think about the first fact. Two unrelated facts. Please, whatever your response is, whatever comes to mind, whatever you'd like to say, go ahead. Fact number one of our new segment, Two Unrelated Facts. According to PBS NewsHour, my favorite TV show, the total cost of the 2024 presidential election spent by candidates, parties, and outsiders came to $5.5 billion. Anybody want to talk? Any responses to that?
I feel like we didn't get our money's worth.
It's pretty hard to get your money's worth if you spend $5.5 billion. But anything else?
Imagine if we'd spent another billion or so. We could have gotten the best candidates.
What do I get for $1 billion? Or how about $5
million? I know. Joe, you nothing? How do you feel about
it? Well, I don't have a good frame of reference to know what that's compared to. I remember when Obama ran in 2008, people were shocked at how much money he was raising. And I bet if we were to go back and look now, we'd be like, oh, wow, that was not very much money compared to where we are now. So I feel like this is in the middle of this incredible political arms race. I guess if I were to make a political point, I would say probably not a good sign for a country that the executive branch is so important, so influential, that it makes sense for everyone involved to spend billions and billions of dollars on losing a presidential race.
It sounds like a desperate act on all of our parts. We've become desperate.
Yeah, so this is a barometer for how large politics loom in the imaginations of Americans. All right. I think that's bad news.
Second part, segment is called Two Unrelated Facts. Fact one was, according to PBS NewsHour, the total cost of the 2024 presidential election was about $5.5 billion. Unrelated fact number two, according to the National Retail Federation, their annual consumer survey, this year Americans are expected to spend $13.1 billion on Halloween.
Yes. If my wife
I feel
is
so much better.
Like 12.9. We'll knock 0.2 billion off.
Go
that.
America.
Yeah. Yes. $13.1 billion on Halloween. Good
right,
Lord.
Let me throw out some numbers for you.
Let me put that in perspective.
Yeah,
$13.1 billion is enough for California to build one train station. Okay? That,
yes.
That's how much money that is. That's one train station. Connected to a train line.
The high-speed rail train?
Exactly. Yeah. Right.
So there's estimates, and I think these estimates should be taken with several grains of salt, that the cost to end extreme poverty would be somewhere around $175 billion per year globally. And
oh my gosh, that breaks your heart when you think about that. We spend that on fighter jets, you know?
Yeah, we spend that almost exactly that amount on pets, $157 billion on pets. So I'm not naming anybody in this flannel panel, but I'm holding Chris personally responsible
people spend
for
a lot of money on Cavalier Control Spaniels.
Well, I just got to push back a little bit on that. I find the word pets offensive. It's fur babies. Please don't use the word pets.
I want to be very clear that I'm not suggesting that we feed people the pets. I'm just saying if we spent less on pets, we would be able to afford.
I don't think that's the corollary there. That we should just, start feeding. Hey, hot dogs, everybody.
That excessive enthusiasm for pets is going to segue nicely into one of our topics today.
One of my favorite things that Pope Francis ever did.
Said pets aren't people.
Pets aren't people. It's just so.
And they don't belong in strollers. Yeah. And
they don't belong in a restaurant either. Can we leave them outside?
They're buying more baby strollers in Korea, right? Pet strollers than baby strollers.
Yeah. You ever get that feeling walking around your neighborhood, like you see the stroller coming and you're like, is this going to be a baby or a dog? Like, and you feel kind of almost overjoyed when it's a baby. Like, look, a baby in a baby stroller.
It's not good for a dog to ride around in a stroller. It's good for the dog to get some to walk. It's good for the dog to walk.
I kind of try to convince my kids that about humans as well. But.
Yeah, it is.
Get out and walk, kids. Yeah.
Exactly.
Do any of your kids, did you have, I had one that had this, I don't know, it's a mental defect. I don't know what you call it. But
get him to call in.
I'll have him call in. Yes, I only have three children. One of them is a boy, and I said him. I do not know what his problem was, but if you let him walk in the grocery store, he walked right in front of the cart at a half a mile an hour. This is it's like, dude, move to the side. Okay.
I gently hit my kids with strollers when they
at least you're gentle.
You can have the conversation, but so we are adjacent to this beautiful boulevard where the sidewalks are like double wide, so you can actually walk with a double stroller or a single stroller, and a kid can walk next to you with no problem. And still, the thing you're describing happens where they walk directly in front of it with.
It's amazing.
Room. There's a passing lane.
But
it's,
you know,
it's amazing.
It's because they're little and their brain is not developed. And then you go on a cruise and you realize that at a certain age, you start doing this again. There's an age. I don't know what that age is, but you start just stopping in front of people again. It's like, what are we doing right now?
I want people listening to hear us say babies are great.
Babies are great.
More babies, and babies are not very smart. No, these things are both true.
They're difficult. Okay. It is
two unrelated facts.
Right, two unrelated facts.
Two unrelated facts.
And that has been our first episode of Two Unrelated Facts. We'll be right back to talk about the news of the world from a Catholic perspective with Joe Heschmeyer, Chris Check, and me, Cy Killett, your host, the Flannel Panel on Catholic Answers Live.
Hang on. Catholic Answers Live will return in a moment.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Hi, this is Mike Aquilina with a few words about St. Cyprian. Cyprian was born to a rich family in Carthage, North Africa. As an adult, he converted to Christianity, and soon he was named bishop of his city. He led the church through a time of multiple crises, including persecution. He himself died a martyr.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. Chris Check, Joe Heschmeyer. With us, I almost said in studio with us, but Joe is lacking propinquity today. He is all the way in the middle of the country. We're on the edge of the country.
On the cutting edge.
We're on the cutting edge. The Pacific Rim, as they call it out here. We're out here on the Pacific Rim. That always makes me feel like we're in someplace really important. Pacific Rim.
I feel like I'm mostly here about that with like volcanoes and such. Am I wrong about that?
The fiery. Is it the fiery rim or and it does look like the Pacific Rim. It kind of looks like it follows.
Okay.
Rim. But
I thought the Pacific Rim was the other side of the Pacific from
the
where
Pacific
we
are. Ring of Fire.
Pacific Ring of Fire. It's called. No, we're on the. I think we're on the Pacific Rim. I think everybody who's on the Pacific is on the Pacific Rim.
Okay.
I hope I didn't get that.
This
wrong.
Is great content. I just want to really
wait. What's the definition of the word rim? That's what we'll spend the next half hour on.
Pacific Rim is a movie. That's what I came away with. I googled
it's about
it.
Kaiju.
It's a movie.
Okay, I got a story for you, Joe. I probably want you to go last on this one because I'm almost sure that Chris and I can have a great conversation on this. None of which will matter because you will give us the correct answer. As a lawyer and theologian, you will give us the correct answer after we've exhausted all the possibilities.
You give me my cue to come in. I will sit
then,
back and
then you'll just flatten us with the truth once we've struggled our way through this story. Catholic statues, according to a headline in USA Today, thrust a Massachusetts city into a national religious liberty debate. Let me read a little bit of this article for you. I will tell you the name of Brianne J. Frank and Peter Blandino are the reporters on this story. And they say a showdown over Catholic statues on a public building in Massachusetts, in a Massachusetts city represents yet another fight in a national conversation about the separation of church and state. You can interrupt me anytime you want, but I'll go on until you do.
How big is this city?
Quincy? Oh, it's pretty big. It's just south of Boston, just south of Dorchester, where Mackie Mac comes from. But it's a pretty big city.
100,000?
Named after, huh, gosh, I don't know. I would think more than that, but I'm not sure.
And this is the mayor who commissioned these statues and
yes.
purchased them with public funds, I gather.
That's exactly right. Quincy Mayor Thomas Koch commissioned statues of St. Michael and St. Florian, the patron saints of police and firefighters, to adorn the new police headquarters. But more than a dozen residents,
this is an uprising.
It's crazy, are suing Koch, alleging, or Koch, I'm not sure exactly how he says it, alleging that the city is violating religious neutrality as outlined in the state constitution, not the federal constitution, I guess. A judge granted a preliminary injunction in mid-October, barring the statues from being installed as litigation continues. Go ahead.
Well, what does the state, Massachusetts state constitution, say about religion? Because at one time, it was illegal to be a Catholic in Massachusetts.
I think they're on their third constitution in Massachusetts, yeah. though. Like the original, they don't still have the original constitution.
There were no public Christmas trees for a time in the history of Massachusetts.
Oh, no, it was all about religious liberty. As long as you were an absolute puritanical English Christian, it was all about religious liberty. That's what Massachusetts was. We chose the statues of Michael and Florian to honor Quincy's first responders, not to promote any religion, Koch said. These figures are recognized symbols of courage and sacrifice in police and fire communities across the world. The Beckett Fund is defending him, and that's the organization that won the Hobby Lobby case, granting private employers the right to deny contraception coverage to employees because of their religious beliefs.
So there's a couple of analogs out here, Cy, in California. One I drove by on my way to Los Angeles on Friday to see a Warren Zevon tribute concert with my sons.
Have we ever done this show and he hasn't mentioned Warren Zevon?
In any case, it
feels
like
lawyers,
it's every time.
Money
4 hours. It was great. It was great.
All right.
But as you drive up to LA on the right hand side, there's that big shopping mall, the Citadel.
It's shocking.
The
monstrosity.
Citadel. And it has about a dozen of these Assyrian
gods or something.
Lanusu.
Is that what it's called?
Lanusus?
I don't know.
Is that how you say it?
I don't know. But they're very recognizable.
They're demons.
You can recognize them from the movie The Exorcist. I believe they're...
And there are no lawsuits.
Oh, no. Well, it is private property, but
okay.
I don't... Like
right,
an ancient
well.
Assyrian god who doesn't exist or at best is a demon... why would you get upset about that when you could get upset about the servants of God, Florian and Michael?
Other one I'm thinking of course, here is the Mount Soledad cross.
The cross, yeah.
That our friend Chuck Lemandry has been defending since...
1492, like I think. I don't know, a long time.
Yes, it's Junipero Serra put it there. But
that's a World War I monument.
They've gotten around by saying it's a war memorial.
Yeah.
Yeah.
34
so,
years. That's how long that
I
legal
think it's
has.
The
Good
longest,
Lord.
One of the longest lawsuits. That kind of defense may be effective here. But the bigger problem is this is a stupid thing to get upset about.
It strikes me both.
There's a whole country on their side of the Atlantic where there are lots of buildings with religious symbols on them.
Yes.
Yeah, and
a whole continent.
Okay, but a couple things that I will say before Joe gives us the correct answer. I actually feel like this is the one where Joe is going to, despite the ridiculous Halloween shirt that he's wearing, he's a very highly educated person. He's both a lawyer and a theologian and a podcaster. So that's three enormous criteria that he's got, three enormous qualifications that he's got. But a couple things. One, it does seem to me it's different if it's already there. Like the cross up on Soledad was there. It's a vestige of a time where people just didn't bother each other too much about this kind of stuff. But this is a new thing. This is a new installation. So I feel like that might be pertinent. But the second point seems to me like... There's nothing like negative about Michael and Florian. It's not like the complaint is entirely based on that the entrance of this building, people are going to have to look at an angel and a saint.
They're attractive statues, by the way.
Yeah, they're wonderful people, Michael and Florian. So yeah. I sometimes feel like I'm of two minds, and I'm going to be of one mind in a minute when Joe tells me the correct answer, but I'm of two minds. One, could we just maybe not make a big deal out of every little religious thing? Like, I feel like if this was, Massasoit or somebody, that the Indian Sachem or something. That would be okay. But it, somehow it's a Catholic thing and it's not okay. I feel like just a little bit of grace for each other. But also, I kind of do think they're going to win this case. And I think they're going to win this case because that's the law in the United States, that the way that we've understood the First Amendment's Establishment Clause is that you just don't use town money to put up a Catholic statue. All right, Joe, straighten us out.
It's messier than that. There was a famous slash notorious Supreme Court case from 1989 called Allegheny County versus ACLU.
I was going to mention that, but then I forgot to go to law school.
Well, you know what? Let me just pose you the issue that's at hand. It's downtown Pittsburgh. There's on public property a nativity scene, a creche, with Gloria in Excelsis Deo and an angel and all that. There's also an 18-foot public Hanukkah menorah placed just outside the city-county building, as well as a decorated Christmas tree and a sign saluting liberty. Nobody sues about the Christmas tree. I don't know why. Nobody sues about the sign saluting liberty. The menorah and the nativity scene are the object of lawsuits that go all the way to the Supreme Court.
Wow.
Do you want to guess how the court found? And I will say, it's a convoluted case where only two justices agreed with the outcome.
Oh, man. So they had to get concurring opinions but not agreeing opinions in order to even have. I'm going to say, and I don't think this is entirely a guess, I feel like I remember some of this, Joe, that they're going to say it's not overtly religious. It's just a cultural thing. And so settle down. Yeah, the celebration of these that I'm going to say Hanukkah and Christmas, these are embedded in the culture. This is the cultural thing we do. It's not an overtly religious thing. Leave them up. I don't.
That'd make total sense.
So that's
there
not.
There were four justices who argued for that.
Okay.
Like, this is constitutional. Relax, everybody. However, that is not what the court came up with.
Okay.
The court came. It was a complicated thing because the two issues, is the nativity scene okay and is the menorah okay, were being litigated at the same time. They found the menorah was okay and the nativity scene was not.
Well, wait. Oh.
Yeah. They thought the menorah was more like the Christmas tree, a generic winter holiday sort of thing, which it blatantly is not. I mean, the menorah is a religious symbol.
It's not connected to a holiday, although you could kind of say it's connected to Hanukkah, you know, the festival of lights.
Oh, yeah, I mean, the menorah is connected to Hanukkah.
But it's not just connected. I mean, it's not like that you don't have the menorah the rest of the year.
But it's also a deeply religious symbol, right?
Like, sure.
It's
yeah.
The temple lamp. So they said nativity scene
excuse
bad.
Me. Did Catholics have the same lawyers that we had in the sex abuse cases on this? Because I'm like, maybe our lawyers are just not good. Like,
No, the two justices who were swing votes. The two justices who agreed with the outcome were Blackmun and O'Connor. So make of that what you will, but, you know, Blackmun was the Roe v. Wade guy. O'Connor was notoriously wherever on everything.
Yeah, she was the middle vote for years.
There were three justices who said neither were okay, four justices who said both are okay, and then the two deciding votes were the ones who said we're cool with the menorah, but not the creche.
But why? The creche is no more overtly religious than the menorah.
I disagree with you. It is. By the way, I agree with the four who said take a chill pill.
Yeah.
But I actually, I think that a compliment has been paid to Christianity here by recognizing its singularity. And the depiction of the incarnation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The single moment in human history that changes everything. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because it would seem that, you know, celebrating the birth of Jesus, from a secular standpoint, you wouldn't even have to be a Christian to say this was good for society, this built Western civilization,
sure,
et cetera. You could celebrate the birth of another figure. But the fact that Christ is so inseparable from Christianity, I think you're right in seeing that as a good thing.
Well,
like, I hear these cases, and I think this Quincy case is going to go this way as well, where the response is, this isn't overtly religious, and therefore we should be allowed to keep it up. And it's like, well, it should be overtly religious. Like, we should.
It's an angel and a saint.
Say,
yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
I'm sorry. In the Quincy case, who paid for these displays?
The town of Quincy.
Oh. No, excuse me. In the one that Joe was describing in Pittsburgh.
You know what? I don't remember. Yeah. It's been too long since
these were school. Private displays on public land, or I mean, because I'm also thinking in many there's that statue of Joan of Arc in Portland, and there's one
down in New Orleans.
In New Orleans,
yeah.
And that's on public land.
But Joan of Arc is just a person too. Like, I mean, for some she would be a
Holy Name Society of Pittsburgh.
No, but she's a saint. She's a canonized saint. And then actually, where Joe lives, I don't know if it's back up yet or not, but that William Volker fountain that's of St. Martin de Tours in Kansas City, that's on public land, right?
We got a little bit more to talk about this one, and then we'll get to, hey, we're going back to National Public Radio. We haven't had any of their, did you guys know they're still going? They are still going, and we've got some of their reporting to follow this story on Flannel Panel on Catholic Answers Live. We hope that one of the things that we communicate here at Catholic Answers Live is that our Catholic faith allows us to be fully serious about all the problems we encounter in the church and in the world, but it also lets us have light hearts and maybe even mix in a bit of fun, and that is exactly what our good friend Joe Heschmeyer does in his popular podcast, Shameless Popery. You should check it out at shamelessjoe.com. Joe's got a deep grasp of the faith, of morals, the teachings of the church, all that, but he's also got a witty conversational style. He entertains and he informs, but you will leave equipped to better answer the most common challenges, misconceptions, and questions about the Catholic faith. He's got insightful guests, he does on-air debates, and he takes a close look into all the things that you want to know about as a Catholic living today. You'll walk away knowledgeable and filled with joy. Look for Joe on his YouTube channel. Check him out at shamelessjoe.com or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, become a patron.
Throughout history, some Catholics have been among the worst kind of villains, right? Or were they? In Canceled, historian Steve Weidenkopf digs into the lives and controversies of some of these Catholics whose reputations have been blackened, often unfairly. He takes on the anti-Catholic versions of history and defends not only these figures, but the faith they represent. Order your copy of Canceled today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
What is the Catholic Church? Everybody seems to have an opinion, but the church never quite fits into the boxes people try to make for it. In The Faith Unboxed, author Andrew Petiprin looks at some of the most common boxes people put the Catholic Church in and explains why they don't fit. In doing so, he brings us closer to what the church really is, the institution founded by Christ. Order The Faith Unboxed today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you. Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. Joe Heschmeyer, Chris Check, our guests. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. It's Flannel Panel, where we talk about the news of the day from a Catholic perspective. We're talking now about a story in USA Today about the town of Quincy, Massachusetts, where the mayor has decided to erect statues of two Catholic saints, one an angel, one a human. Florian's a human, right? Florian's a human.
Yes, indeed.
Roman soldier?
I don't know about Florian.
I believe he is. He's one of the very early saints. I'm pretty sure he's Roman.
The basic idea is that these are...
Actually from Austria, then part of the Roman Empire. So if you want to call that Roman, you can, but...
It was big, the Roman Empire.
All right. Yes. Important things being covered on this show today.
Patron saint of Poland? Go on.
Wait, Florian is the patron saint of Poland?
That's why the Massachusetts.
Is this anti-Polish
like it. It is.
Bigotry yeah. on the part of makes sense. Massachusetts atheists? Yeah. I just want to raise the other side of this for a moment. We do have to consider at some point that the government of the United States, or one of the governments of the United States, in this case, the government of a town, and this will be tried under the state constitution of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, we really shouldn't be imposing religion. I don't think that that's I don't want to say...
Let me push back on that a little bit.
Well, I agree
with the actual terms. Yeah, go ahead.
Let me make the point, and you push back, because I feel like
We do want to be respectful of atheists. We do want to be, we don't want to be disrespectful of the person who doesn't believe in angels and saints. And we don't want to have a society where we're just like, ah, suck it up, atheist. That's not
these statues right. Don't do that. And when you say respectful of atheists, what do you mean? I mean, tolerant? I think you mean tolerant.
No, I think we should be respectful of everybody. I mean, not necessarily of atheism, but of the atheist person. We should have respect.
Okay, very
for
good. Yeah, sure. But that's it's a kind of it's not a dogmatic tolerance, but it's a sort of a practical tolerance. You like when a teacher is trying to explain the Pythagorean theorem to his geometry class, and that somebody's not getting it, and so you tolerate their ignorance.
But I would go even farther than that. I think
as you're bringing them along to something.
I want to live in a civil society with people who are not like me, and so I want to be civil to them.
But
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, but society has an end.
Yes,
it's society has
salvation of souls.
It does. It does. Yeah, it does. So,
but that's not its only end. That's its ultimate end. But it has other ends, which, you know, like providing people with a place where they can live in peace with one another.
I agree. I do think there's a kind of tolerance that you want to have of unbelievers or people in any kind of error.
Right.
But although if it's a criminal error, then no, you don't want that.
Right.
But I'm not certain these statues.
That they do that they offend.
Yeah. And by the way, I don't even like that word offend.
Well, I mean, there is such a thing as offense. But we use it to mean I feel offended,
right.
Not I am offended.
Right.
And how to be offended is very different than to feel offended.
The truth can't be offensive.
Explain that distinction.
Between feeling and being offended? Okay.
Yeah.
Someone could steal my wallet. They have offended me. If I don't know they stole my wallet, I don't feel offended by it, but they have offended me. Someone can hurt my feelings by saying Jesus is Lord, and I could say that offends me. I feel offended by that, but that's not an offense. The person did not offend against me.
So the
feeling and the fact are two different things.
Yeah, if I tell you I'm going to pray for you and that offends you, that's actually your error. Not mine.
And but I would say go further. You did not offend me.
No, but
I felt offended.
No, but if you were, yes, exactly.
Yeah. Right, yeah. So I think we have to distinguish between the feeling of I take offense to the fact, because you can in fact offend against other people. So anyway, Joe, I feel sensitive to what Chris is saying, but I don't know where to draw the line. I don't know where is the line where I want to be civil to my fellow citizens.
Yes, I think the first thing to note here is that people have been habituated because of these laws to imagine that they've got an offense against them that they otherwise might not be even upset about. So, for instance, you go to a post office in Italy and you'll find like a picture of Mary. I mean, literally, this is true. The police station had a picture of Mother Teresa in Rome. And no one
Wait,
is
why
like,
were you in the police station in Rome? Do you want to share that story? Or?
Great question for another day.
Okay.
No, I hadn't done all my paperwork. I had to go like repeat
okay.
get something.
All right,
I wasn't
go ahead.
In any serious trouble. Great question though. But yeah, so you find this stuff as Chris alluded to earlier, all across Europe, and somehow people manage to survive even if they're not Christian.
Yeah.
That it doesn't, you know, like you can be in a Muslim country and it has a dedication to a law on the flag. And you're not mortally wounded by that fact.
So, right, right.
The first thing is people are needlessly sensitive about this. And the people who get upset about it then try to do things that are intentionally provocative, like putting in Satanist statues. But honestly, if your reaction to seeing, even a religious display on public property is that it's like seeing Satan to you, that's demented. And I would suggest spiritually indicative of where you are. That if goodness is as bad to you as badness is to sane people, that's a problem. Second, these things aren't causing any real damage. I mean, that's kind of putting a bow on the point I just made, that no one is forcing your conscience to do something that it wasn't going to do otherwise. That's one of the ways you can quantify this. You have no right to be free from seeing Catholic displays. That's not a real thing. You do have a right to be free from religious coercion, of being coerced into saying you believe something you don't believe. Third, the state has had no problem doing things. You know, here in Kansas City, as beautiful of a town this is, there is a street painted rainbow for Pride Month and another street covered with the names of BLM victims, you know, people who died at the hands of police brutality, allegedly. And those things were as annoying and aggravating to people who don't share those values as any picture of a saint would be. And the state is perfectly free to do that. You know, like, so yeah, to draw the line at saying you can put up the rainbow, but you can't put up the cross is garbage. It's an arbitrary line drawing.
The state, that's interesting. The state, right, is not free to celebrate error.
Oh, that's fair. Actually, there is a deeper sense in which, as Quas Primus, Pius XI, yeah, says, that the empire of our Redeemer embraces all men. And then he quotes Pope Leo XIII to say that his empire includes not only Catholic nations, not only baptized persons who, though of right belonging to the church, have been led astray by error, who have been cut off from her by schism, but also all those who are outside the Christian faith, so that truly the whole of mankind is subject to the power of Jesus Christ.
Amen.
Like,
amen.
That's what it means to say Christ is king, not just of my heart, yeah, but of the whole world.
Yes.
And then he says, Pius XI here, nor is there any difference in this matter between the individual and the state or the family, for all men, whether collectively or individually, are under the dominion of Christ. In him is the salvation of the individual, in him is the salvation of society. Neither is there salvation in any other, for there's no other name under heaven given to men whereby we must be saved. I think that's incredible.
Well, it's also true.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I guess credible in that sense, but also incredible. Like,
but
amazing.
So long as it's understood in the, because I do worry about the, especially the young person who hasn't grasped the fullness of the church's teaching about the dignity of each person, and not their right to be in error, but because that's a silly way to think about life. But
right.
But everybody having a right to be respected in their person, not because we think all beliefs are the same, but sometimes I think there's a kind of a bullying that especially young people are attracted to. Like, well, you're in error, therefore we don't have to love you and care about you.
You idiot. We don't have bullying problems.
These statues do not. These statues don't even.
I got to call human. I'm going to human resources. You two continue this conversation. Where's Karen? Where is she?
Go ahead. Statues do not constitute bullying in any way. This is not. It's not bullying. To put these statues.
No,
up.
That wasn't my
no,
concern.
No, I understand.
My
I understood what you
that...
meant by it, but there's no, there's objectively these are good statues.
Yes.
And by the way, they're like I say, they're attractive statues. So that's also good. But I'm just gonna repeat myself. It is reasonable for a polity to exercise a certain level of toleration of error as it tries to draw its citizens into the fullness of the truth, right? And that's utterly in accord with the quote from Quas Primus that Joe just read. In fact, there's no other way to interpret that quote. So yeah, obviously, in a religiously plural society, you're going to tolerate some error, but you're never going to say that error has right.
Right. I agree with you. Yeah. And it is good to be reminded. To be reminded that these statues are good. They are put up for a good purpose. They're perfectly reasonable. But I do also appreciate the line that you. I mean, I think there's lots of people that would deny that the flag, the rainbow flag, is a religious symbol. We did another day. We can talk about that because I think we would dispute that. It is clearly a counter religion to Christianity.
It seems completely arbitrary to call it. I mean, what do we mean by religious there? Because the Establishment Clause cases talk about establishing either religion or no religion. So if you put up something that is incompatible with religion, that is as much of an offense. In fact,
yes, that's right. That's
I
establishing
can't
a religion.
That in a way that you don't have any sort of moral reason. You can't be like, yeah, that Florian guy sounds like he was a great guy.
Yeah,
like an atheist can be like, I'm not a Christian, but I respect Florian dying for his faith.
We have to take the break. When we come back to National Public Radio clips, we haven't done them for a while. Hang on. Catholic Answers Live.
Hang on. We'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live.
The Catechism defines evangelization as the proclamation of Christ and his gospel by word and the testimony of life. But what does that look like in real life? It looks like St. Paul street evangelists out in the public square sharing the good news. We're a Catholic nonprofit that starts conversations by handing out free sacramentals. Then we employ our method of listen, befriend, proclaim, and invite. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization. Visit streetevangelization.com to learn more.
Mother Angelica had a simple goal when she began EWTN, to reach the world with a gospel message. You can enjoy EWTN live TV and radio streams, EWTN news, program schedules, prayers, and devotionals with the EWTN app. We've never wavered from our mandate to proclaim the truth and majesty of the Catholic faith. Thank you for joining EWTN in this mission.
Welcome back, Catholic Answers Live, National Public Radio, which I was told would utterly die if there was a cut in their funding, seems to be doing just fine. They have discovered something that I feel like we discovered on this show years ago, but I don't want to come at this just by opening with my pride. That's probably a bad opening. Darren, can you play clip one to tell us what important, worldwide important story that the National Public Radio is discovering this week?
Families are having far fewer children than in the past. This is true in many countries around the world. It's true in the United States, where the birth rate last year hit an all-time low. It's true in China, where the population has begun declining even after a one-child policy ended. So what does this mean for the world? NPR is launching a new series this morning called Population Shift. NPR's Brian Mann gets us started by looking at how this development is challenging basic ideas about capitalism.
It was going great there until we got to the last sentence. We're like, what? How about the survival of the human race? Chris, you brought this. You were aware of this well before I was, and you brought this story. What struck you about the fact that NPR is doing this?
I'm wondering why they're suddenly addressing it now, because as you observed, there have been people, social historians, I think of my friend Alan Carlson, for example, who have been debunking, you know, Paul Ehrlich, was that his name?
Ehrlich. Yeah.
Paul Ehrlich.
Yeah. Population bomb.
Yeah, for the longest time.
The New York Times did a debunking. I mean, I hate to say this, but NPR, welcome to the club, but the New York Times debunked Paul Ehrlich, I think it was about 10 years ago, with a really significant bit of reporting.
Yeah, but even in my professional lifetime or post-Marine Corps lifetime, there was a guy named McGibbon, I think, Bill McGibbon, who wrote a book called Only One. So I would say in the last 20 years especially, maybe you're seeing people who otherwise would have been, it's good that we're not having babies because it's bad for the environment, suddenly, or not suddenly, but maybe slowly, becoming concerned about this. But I was struck by what they describe it as.
Yeah.
A population shift.
You shift.
This is not a shift. This is a collapse.
Yeah, right.
It's an implosion.
Right.
It's a demographic winter, which is what folks have been calling it. And outside of something miraculous, it appears to be irreversible. The other thing, I have so much to say about this.
Good.
It's funny that this has implications for capitalism. It does.
I know.
It also has implications for Marxism too. Any economic system that views human persons as resources, as we call them, right?
Without the transcendent view of the person, just
right.
The
purpose of which is
this. By the way, is why we don't have a human resources department, for amongst other reasons.
Otherwise, I would have filed a complaint against you. I just want you to know that if we had one,
So human persons, in fact, were not designed by God to service the bottom line, whether you're. Economic system is Marxist or capitalist, they both make that same kind of homo economicus error, right? Economic man. I haven't heard them all yet. The one on Finland yesterday, today, was of interest because it shows that no matter how much you throw in terms of government incentives and money at the problem, it's not really moving the needle. I'm guessing I'm guessing the last segment will be, well, we need immigration. But the difficulty there is once immigrants come to the nations of Western society, they quickly take on the bad habits. Can I say one more thing?
I think you've said that for every single one of your points. Yes, you can.
One of the most influential men in modern history, and nobody knows his name, John Rock, the Irishman who invented the hormonal
birth control, right?
Yeah, the hormonal contraceptive. Irish Catholic. And actually, I think he was actually, at first, when he starts the science of it, he's trying to help women regulate their menstrual cycles. I think that's what's behind it. John, I mean, Joe probably has a little better command of the history than I do. But this single man, I mean, there are bad ideas behind birth control, but the contraception, I don't like that word, birth control, hormonal contraceptives, they're bad ideas that inform its design and its use. But the creation, the design of the hormonal contraceptive, and that was 100 years ago, right? Roughly?
Yeah, that's right.
Not even that long.
So in 100 years.
The trajectory of the human race has been permanently altered.
And I think not reversible, which also I think we should talk about.
Well, I do think even the demographers, they're a dour group, the demographers.
I thought it was doer.
Doer.
That's is it a doer or dower?
Dower.
Oh.
Right?
Okay. It's.
I like Joe better.
It's doer and it's schism.
You have some, you have very precise pronunciations.
Wow, no, I hate this, but. It looks like maybe both pronunciations are right, but when I clicked the pronunciation guide, it said doer.
Doer, yeah.
I've never didn't heard you get anyone pronounce it that way.
The demographers are negative, but
don't you have a master's degree in English?
There is. I do have a master's degree
doer.
In English.
Yeah, and yes, by the way, it's syrup.
But my degree was earned in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, where pronunciation doesn't count for any points.
M-A-R-R-Y and M-E-R-R-Y are all different sounds for them.
All right, but look, it does seem like China has. I was very interested to hear how casual Steve Inskeep was in saying, despite the reversal of the one-child policy, one of the look. I know
where they killed babies.
I know the Holocaust is like I'll accept that as the worst thing that happened in the 20th century. You want a competitor for second most evil thing? It's the Chinese vicious communists. Murdering, killing, brutalizing, and beating their way to a one-child policy. It's one of the most lunatic things that was ever done in the history of the human race, and China is never going to recover from it. Absent what Chris said, a miracle, and I send us a miracle, Lord. We need a miracle for the people of China because China cannot ever recover from it. They cannot ever replace the population that they lost. The population of China, that China in the next couple decades will lose 200 million people from their workforce. That is double the workforce of, I shouldn't say double the workforce of the United States, but it's pretty close to double the workforce of the entire United States. They're going to lose 200 million workers. The total population of China will be in decline until it gets to zero. That nobody knows how to reverse this. There's barring a full spiritual revival where Chinese women decide, I want to. They won't do it if they don't want to. The state can't control them. No one can make them. Unless the Spirit of God moves and Chinese women say, I want to have a large family, which was considered a blessing in China for 4,000 years, and the communists ruined that, China will never recover. And people don't understand how serious that story is.
It is extraordinary. A generation ago, we were going to reproduce ourselves and suffocate ourselves.
It was always a lie.
Yeah.
It was always a lie.
Yep.
Well, it was a mistake on some people's part, but in many part, it was a lie. They just wanted to reproduce.
Well, it's possible for a single part of the country to have too many people in it.
It's possible like for a boat to have too many people in it.
That's right.
That's not overpopulation. That's too many people in that particular boat.
That's a scale problem. Exactly.
Right.
Yeah, 1,000 people in the studio would be a lot.
Right. When I'm sitting in traffic, That's not overpopulation.
Yes, that's, yeah.
That's just a problem of crowding.
Right.
It has nothing to, there's no such thing as overpopulation.
It's a scale problem.
It has never existed. It never can exist. There is no such thing as overpopulation. It's a figment of our imagination. Joe, you look like you're chomping
at
the bit.
Well, I was just going to add that, like, the
champing.
One-child policy. Even
champing.
Though
it's champing.
I'm
champing at the bit.
Joe, you look dour and like you are champing at the schismatic bit. Go ahead.
Thank Perfect. You. I'm a doer. I'm a champ. the one-child policy, I didn't realize this. Do you know when they got rid of all of the limits completely?
I think it was.
So it went from one child to two child.
I'm
going to
say 2017.
2015, but yeah, 2015. Pretty darn close.
Okay.
And even then, they – oh, I'm sorry, no, 2021. 2020 – so let me
too little too late.
Yeah, 2015, they raised it from one child to two, 2021 to three children, and then a few months later they removed all limits because I think they realized they've done a huge damage. And obviously people were aborting their daughters or
girls,
abandoning
right.
their daughters mm-hmm. to die because they – realized they would be more likely to be economically supported in later life by sons. And so there is this whole generation of missing women. And we have no idea what that's going to mean, but it's not going to be good.
It's bad for reproduction.
That's what makes the problem, that exacerbates the problem. You have an excess of men. I mean, nature has this really cool thing it does. It slightly more boys are born than girls. And by the time we're 18, it's exactly 50-50 because
that
boys
really
are
cool.
idiots. we fall off of stuff. We kill ourselves.
They walk in front of strollers in the grocery store.
We just do moronic. That we
Life
know
will
that.
Find a way.
All right, we don't need
Life
women to tell us this. By the way, we know what morons we are. We just don't want to talk about it. So by 18, we're perfectly matched, and that will never be true in any society on Earth again because people are doing selective abortion. Play clip number two, Darren, if you would.
I don't need another one. I don't want another one. I love having only one child. It is, I think, a very elegant choice because I still feel like I have balance in my life.
Wow.
The description of children as a very elegant choice. Like, it is not like you've decided to use the really nice silverware at dinner and you're just like, wow, this really improves the look of the table. These are human beings. Mm-hmm. It's a very elegant choice to just have one. That whole way of thinking about the world. It's hard to get myself.
I just have to say
mind.
This as the child of six brothers and sisters, the best gift any
yes.
parent
yes.
can ever give
Siblings.
A child is a brother or a sister.
Siblings.
That's
yes.
what they want. They don't want the private school. They don't want the Lexus. They want a brother and sister. That's what they want. If you really love that one kid, give them a brother or a sister. Go ahead,
it sounds when you have one kid, like you're just going to be multiplying your problems. And it's not really true. Like it,
oh, you've already got so many problems. By the time you got one kid, you have so many problems. Stop worrying about stuff. This whole thing is going on faith now after this.
By the way, if
my kids are 5, 4, and 2 right now, and when they all play together and we can actually like sit down and breathe, it's amazing.
Yeah.
And a lot of times dealing with one of them is more taxing than having all three of them around where they can, you know, interact with each other.
So this woman does not understand God's design for the human person, which is to create a person who gives of himself or herself.
Right.
And so, frankly, it could be possible, I suppose, though unlikely, that someone might say, I want one boy and one girl. Someone could say that. I want one boy and one girl, and we're stopping at that. But it's still this sort of collecting or acquisition. Mm-hmm.
Meets my needs as a parent.
Yeah, right.
I want what,
it's
what
about
meets
me.
My needs
it
as a parent.
It is about me and parenting. Is not about you. It's about the children.
It's about what your wife tells you to do. That's what it's about.
Yes. Yeah.
We got a lot more from National Public Radio to come on the other side, so I hope you'll hang with us. It's not to say that National Public Radio's reporting is bad on this. As a matter of fact, I'm very glad that they're reporting on it. They are late to the game, but it's interesting what they have to say. And we'll talk about what that young woman you just heard said, because we do want to say, look, somehow in her life, the point of human life was not communicated or... Maybe she rejected it, but it seems to me more like it wasn't communicated. But this is a problem we need to admit to ourselves. If young women will not have children, the human race does not go on. So let's all start thinking about how can we structure the whole of our society so that young women will choose children. Because it's worth everything we have, because it's one of those things, if you don't do it, what you get is no future. We will continue. Chris Check will come back for another hour. I might not be here. I might be in the human resource office complaining about Joe Heschmeyer, but Joe Heschmeyer will be here right back after this with more Flannel Panel on Catholic Answers Live.